Welcome to this special edition of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, managing editor with Neurology Live, and today I have breaking news. On Friday, March 18th, the FDA approved ganaxolone, marketed as Ztalmy by Marinus Pharmaceuticals, for the treatment of seizures associated with CDKL5 deficiency disorder, also known as CDD, in patients aged 2 years and older. The oral suspension therapy is the first such approved for CDD, and following its scheduling by the DEA, it is expected to be available via a specialty pharmacy in July of this year. The therapy was approved under priority review and orphan drug and rare pediatric disease designations and supported by data from the Phase 3 Marigold trial, a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial that randomized 101 patients. Those treated with the study drug in the trial experienced a significant median reduction in major motor seizure frequency compared with placebo, meeting the trial's primary endpoint. Ganaxolone is a neuroactive steroid that acts as a positive allosteric modulator of the GABA-A receptor. Dr. Scott Braunstein, the CEO of Marinus, called the approval an historic milestone not only for Marinus, but CDD patients, families, and caregivers who have long been navigating the unpredictable, often devastating reality of living with uncontrolled seizures. Adding that the approval of Ztalmy would not have been possible without the patients, caregivers, and investigators who participated in the clinical trials to develop this important new therapy. Braunstein added as well that the company was grateful and humbled by the opportunity to bring the first and only FDA-approved treatment for seizures associated with CDD to its community. Study investigator Dr. Scott Damarest, a pediatric neurologist and epileptologist at Children's Hospital Colorado and an assistant professor of neurology at the University of Colorado, among other things, spoke to us shortly after the approval to offer his perspective and experience. Here's what Dr. Damarest with his thoughts on the approval of ganaxolone.
I think it's exciting to have another tool in the toolbox, is what it comes down to. And I'm very excited anytime we see successful clinical trials in rare diseases, particularly first ever in rare diseases that lead to FDA approval. It also tells us that our scientific methods are working for rare diseases and being able to conduct successful trials in new conditions like CDKL5 that hasn't had a phase 3 randomized trial that's led to FDA approval of a drug before.
In the phase 3 Marigold trial, which included 101 randomized patients, those treated with the study drug experienced a median reduction of 30.7% in 28-day major motor seizure frequency compared with a 6.9% reduction for those on placebo, meeting the trial's primary endpoint with significance. In the open-label extension study, those on ganaxolone for at least 1 year, totaling 48 patients, reported a median reduction of 49.6% in major motor seizure frequency. Here's Dr. Damarest with his take on the data.
I think the data was really pretty interesting when it came out in this. One of the most salient points in my mind was the historically low placebo rate of response in the placebo group for CDKL5 deficiency disorder. I believe it was 6.97% placebo response rate. Oftentimes you see 15-20% response rates in epilepsy trials. That's part of what I think allowed for meeting the endpoint in this trial with a 30% reduction in seizures in the ganaxolone group. Approximately. And so one of the things that tells me is, yeah, CDKL5 is a really refractory epilepsy. It's very hard to treat. And so moving the mark and having another tool that's going to be able to help treat these patients, it may not work for every patient, but it's going to work for some of them. And I think that's really exciting.
In its clinical development program, ganaxolone has demonstrated both safety and overall tolerability. The most common adverse events with an incidence of at least 5% and occurring at a rate of at least twice that of placebo in the ganaxolone group were somnolence, pyrexia, salivary hypersecretion, and seasonal allergy. Here's Dr. Demarest with a little more on his experience with the therapy as well as managing CDD.
CDKL5 deficiency disorder is one of the most challenging epilepsies in my experience to treat. And I devote my practice almost exclusively to severe neurogenetic conditions and genetic epilepsies, which tend to, as a whole, be refractory. Most of our patients cycle through numerous medications over the period of time that they are having epilepsy, which tends to be lifelong, with only relatively brief pauses in some cases in their epilepsy. And so anything that's going to allow us to get more patients under control for a period of time and hopefully for longer periods of time is going to be really valuable to this community, because what currently exists is inadequate to control seizures for the vast majority of patients.
As the oral suspension therapy will still need scheduling by the DEA, it is not anticipated to be available until July of 2022, where it will be accessible via a specialty pharmacy. Here's Dr. Demarest once more with his perspective on what the clinical community should know in the meantime.
The first step is obviously to be aware that there is a specific drug out there that's approved for CDKL5 deficiency disorder. In the rare disease landscape, and as we continue to make advances, there's often a lag in knowledge. And so I appreciate you guys doing the work you're doing to help disseminate this type of thing. It is a drug that I think that should be on a person's mind with any individual who has a diagnosis of CDKL5 deficiency disorder. There is a median age of onset of about 6 weeks for CDKL5 deficiency disorder for when epilepsy starts. And so this is approved down to 2 years of age. Oftentimes in that first year of life with CDKL5, you can see things like epileptic spasms or infantile spasms. So early on, I think it's going to be interesting for us to try to sort out where will this drug be used. We often use a lot of drugs off-label. We're trying to get to more evidence around that as well, of what role it plays. But certainly by the time you get to 2 years of age, if we're still struggling with seizures and we've been through several medications, I think this is a great drug to be able to try. The encouraging thing in many ways was that it seems to be pretty safe. Somnolence is certainly a risk, which we see with many seizure medications, so isn't necessarily a surprise. There didn't seem to really be any difference in serious adverse events between the placebo and treatment group. And most of those adverse events were things that we would think would be at risk in this population. And so I think based on current data, it looks to be a pretty safe medication, and that shouldn't inhibit anybody from feeling comfortable using it in a patient with CDD. Now, I'm excited that this is available. I'm excited we're going to be able to get it into hands of patients who maybe weren't part of the trial and are interested in trying it. I'm very close with the CDKL5 community, and I know that there's excitement from many patients who maybe were nervous or didn't have access to a trial. And so being able to expand that access at this point is an exciting prospect.
Just a few short days after ganaxolone's approval, on Monday, March 28th, the FDA approved an expanded indication for fenfluramine, a Zogenix/UCB therapy known as Fintepla, to include the treatment of seizures associated with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, or LGS, a rare childhood developmental and epileptic encephalopathy. The indication includes children aged 2 years and older and marks the second indication for fenfluramine, which was also approved as a treatment for Dravet syndrome, another rare epilepsy, in June 2020. Fenfluramine also received pediatric exclusivity from the FDA and will be available through a restricted distribution program called the Fintepla Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy Program, given the drug's boxed warning for risk of valvular heart disease and pulmonary arterial hypertension. The basis for the approval were data from study 1601, along with other long-term safety and efficacy data from an ongoing open-label extension. Study 1601 showed that treatment with fenfluramine was superior to placebo in reducing monthly drop seizure frequency. Fenfluramine is a serotonergic 5-HT2 receptor agonist and a sigma-1 receptor antagonist. Mike Davis, the head of global epilepsy at UCB, said the approval highlights their continued commitment to bringing differentiated medicines to patients who may not be well controlled on current therapies and their caregivers, adding that the company was proud to add the medicine to its portfolio to help reduce the impact and burden of seizures, including severe epilepsy syndromes that have high pediatric morbidity and mortality rates. Study investigator Dr. Kelly Knupp, who is also a pediatric neurologist at Children's Hospital Colorado and an associate professor of neurology at the University of Colorado, spoke with Neurology Live shortly after the approval as well to offer her perspective and experience with fenfluramine. Here's Dr. Knupp with her thoughts on the approval.
It's always exciting to have a new drug approved for children with Lennox-Gastaut. You know, this is a pretty devastating developmental epileptic encephalopathy, and the vast majority of these children have poorly controlled seizures. And so it's always good to have another tool in our toolbox to help manage that. You know, I think one of the things that's exciting about this particular medication is it works by a different mechanism of action than the other medicines that we have available. So, you know, I think it's just one more approach that we can have for this patient population.
In study 1601, fenfluramine-treated patients in the 0.7 milligram per kilogram per day group achieved a reduction of 19.9% in estimated median difference from placebo in monthly drop seizure frequency change from baseline, which was comparable to the magnitude that's been demonstrated in other LGS randomized controlled trials. It also showed a statistically significant effect on secondary endpoints, including the proportion of patients with a clinically meaningful reduction, which occurred in 25.3% of those on fenfluramine, compared with just 10.3% of those on placebo. In the 12-month extension, fenfluramine continued to show a sustained reduction among a cohort of 247 patients who entered, with a 39.4% reduction in seizure frequency at month 3 and a 51.8% decline for patients assessed between months 10 and 12. Here's Dr. Knupp with her take on the efficacy.
I mean, so, you know, obviously it demonstrated efficacy. Their outcome measure was a little bit different than what was used in Dravet syndrome. Their outcome measure was seizures associated with a drop. And the response rate was a little bit lower than the Dravet population, but still statistically significant. I think it's really important to keep in mind that the Dravet population is a population that, for the most part, has the same genetic mutation across the entire population, whereas Lennox-Gastaut is, you know, is a much, much more heterogeneous population. And so it may be that there's some subsets in there that we find that this medication works better for than others. And that probably explains some of the difference in response rate between the two populations. I think the other thing that is important to keep in mind is that when they looked at just generalized tonic-clonic seizures, there also was a significant reduction. It was almost close to 50% reduction of generalized tonic-clonic seizures. And, you know, this patient population has a variety of different seizure types. But for many of these patients, these generalized tonic-clonic seizures are the ones that really impact quality of life of both the child and the patient. They're bigger seizures. They're scary seizures. They have a longer postictal period. And so reducing these bigger seizures, I think, will go a long way to improve quality of life in these patients.
The medication has also shown a similar safety profile to what has been reported in Dravet syndrome, where it is already approved. In the original study 1601, the incidence of experiencing an adverse event was 89.7% in the 0.7 milligram per kilogram per day group, 76.4% in the 0.2 milligram per kilogram per day group, and 79.3% in the placebo group. In the extension, the drug continued to be well tolerated with no observed valvular heart disease or pulmonary hypertension. Decreased appetite, fatigue, nasopharyngitis, and seizures were the most often reported treatment-emergent adverse events. Here's Dr. Knupp with a little more on her experience with the therapy as well as its safety and clinical use.
outside the trial, my experience has largely been in the Dravet population. And, you know, it's not a perfect medicine for every child. There are some children who respond well, and unfortunately, there are some who don't respond well. But for the most part, it's been a very well-tolerated medication. Families feel that the side effects are relatively minimal, which is really nice to hear. These are often families, both with Dravet and with Lennox-Gastaut, who have tried numerous medications. I believe, in fact, in the Lennox-Gastaut population, the average anti-seizure medications that had been tried prior was like 7 or 8 anti-seizure medications before they went into the trial. So and that's the average. There were, you know, certainly kids who had more and a few who had less. So, you know, these are families that are well-versed in side effects and they find it very well tolerated. I think there's been a lot of concern about the potential cardiac side effects, and certainly some anxiety in families about that. Our families with Dravet syndrome are very relieved to have the REMS program because we're continuing to follow it. I think it's important to note that this really is just a potential side effect. To date, no child who's been on fenfluramine has had any cardiac side effects related to this at all. So no valvular disease and no pulmonary hypertension. And I think that is really exciting to see that. And certainly something we need to continue to monitor. But I think that's very reassuring that so far we haven't found any issues.
Fenfluramine will now join a variety of other therapies for the treatment of Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, and notably, as many patients with LGS live with refractory disease, its use in combination with other agents is critical. Particularly as quality of life is so strongly impacted by LGS, there is a significant focus in its management to improve quality of life whenever possible. Here's Dr. Knupp once more with her perspective on the use of fenfluramine in the clinic and what the community should know now that it will be treating Lennox-Gastaut syndrome.
Yeah, I suspect it'll be a combination of both. I mean, these are families who, as we've already talked about, have tried multiple medications. And so there'll be a group of families that are excited to have something new that has a different mechanism of action than what they've used already. And so those families have been waiting for this. And I think over time, we'll figure out like where in the order of medications do we use this? Many times, both in our Dravet population and our Lennox-Gastaut population, when I talk to families about medications, I don't talk about, should we try this medication? We really talk about when should we try this medication? You know, we know throughout your child's lifetime that you are probably going to need to try many of these medications. And so the question is, do we do this now or do we do it later? I think this will just be one more medication that we're able to offer families so that they have choices about when they're going to try the medication. Patients had to be on another medication in order to participate in the trial. And many of those patients were on a number of medications. I think that's, for the most part, the nature of treatment with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and other drug-resistant epilepsies is that many patients continue to be on polypharmacy. And I think we have to be rational about it so that, you know, we're able to estimate drug interactions and, you know, that we're not having more side effects. You know, I do fear that more medications means more side effects, and we want to make sure that we watch out for that. So I would anticipate that this will be used in polypharmacy. It hasn't been studied in monotherapy yet. I guess the one thing I would say, though, is it's really important to keep in mind that for children with Lennox-Gastaut and adults with Lennox-Gastaut, they require a lot of support. And so their quality of life impacts their family quality of life as well. And there's definitely some data to support that. And so, you know, anything we can do that improves quality of life for our patients with Lennox-Gastaut improves quality of life for the entire family. And, you know, reduction of these generalized tonic-clonic seizures may go a long way in improving that. And so any new drug, I think, is going to be helpful for the community.
For more coverage of ganaxolone and fenfluramine's approvals, check out the corresponding links in the show notes or head to neurologylive.com. Additionally, more coverage of epilepsies and seizure disorders can be found on our Epilepsy Clinical Focus page. Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. We'll be back on Friday, April 8th, with our regularly scheduled episode. But in the meantime, look out for more special episodes over the course of 2022. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.